Blog Talk Radio.
I just wanted to say...
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Well, no, not really. It is Hezzy Eris.
Well, not really.
Time. Yeah. Well, no, not really. But that's close. That's because you talk without the English accent. I don't pay attention to you. Okay, I pay attention to the lady with the English accent because I like her. Okay, she's probably
an
89-year-old woman who's she's probably about 89 years old and sits there and knits all day. Okay, you know, probably up there in Scotland, you know, where she's mutton every day. Good morning, everyone. This is Jeffrey Swartz. I should say my name right. I am a professor of law at Cooley Law School's Tampa Bay campus. I am here with my compatriot, Brendan Berry, who is also, and day-to-day, a professor of law at Cooley Law School. And this is the Constitution today and everything else we want to talk about. We are supposed to say, and I will say, that everything that Brendan and I say and the opinions that we espouse are ours and ours alone, again, except for the ones that we share, which is just about everything. It is not necessarily the opinions of Cooley Law School's administration or its faculty individually or at large. So the first thing they do is they say, good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Jeffrey, and good morning, Hezzy. How you guys doing?
Good morning, both.
It's
a pleasure to have you both on. I'm looking forward to today. I don't know why.
I don't know either.
I don't know why you're looking forward
right.
to listening to us. But that's okay. Thank you for that kind of backhanded compliment. That's like saying, here, will you hold this package for me because I really trust you, and there's a bomb in the package. Okay. I trust you with my bomb. Okay. So, good morning. We're having a little bit of fun here like we always do. I agree with you. I kind of look forward to today's broadcast only because there is just, so much to talk about that we won't talk about and so few things that we actually will talk about compared to the mass quantity. And normally we start out with a little humor and talk about, something funny that's happened in the world. But right now there's just so much going on that I find so little humor with. I said this last week. It's hard to find humor. For example, I find no humor in the fact that Ron DeSantis was in a car accident last night and didn't get hurt. I don't find that humorous. But I thought I would mention it anyway. Okay.
I didn't hear about that.
You didn't hear about? See, I held something back on you this morning. As always, because everybody believes that we are a left-wing conspiracy on this particular show, I kind of reinforce that by saying that Brendan and I spend a little bit of time every Tuesday morning talking about what's going on in the world, depressing each other, sharing our Prozac, and then we go on the air. because we cut them in half because we have to function the rest of the day. There's a lot of little things to talk about today. There are some big things, but there's some little things to talk about. And bringing up Ron DeSantis, it's just a lot of fun today. Ron is going to take up some of our time. Another story that I just found, Brendan, I'm waiting for your reaction to this one. A long time ago, people started questioning Ron DeSantis's role as a naval officer at Gitmo. Gitmo is Guantanamo base where they kept all of the big prison where they kept all the people that they captured in Afghanistan and all the Taliban people and Al-Qaeda people that they captured, what his role was, because he was a lawyer, a JAG officer, who did two things. Okay. They kind of switched off between prosecuting and defending some of these people because that was their job. As you might recall, there were a number of hunger strikes that took place. And there were stories that Ronnie Boy had been involved in authorizing and participating in the force feeding of some of these people who were on hunger strikes. And he kept saying, I'm just a junior officer. I didn't participate in the decision-making process. Well, apparently he really did. He basically helped set out the rules and the criteria for when they would force feed prisoners. And there's a former prisoner who now lives, I believe it's over in Serbia, who gave a report on a Vice documentary, which was entitled, Natch, the Guantanamo Candidate. And he talks about the fact that DeSantis was there. DeSantis was supposedly supposed to be helping them. But meanwhile, while they were being force-fed, he was standing at the gates or standing at the wire watching all of this happen with a big smile on his face. He was literally enjoying what they were doing to these detainees. To me, it sounds very plausible for a guy who we all know is just relatively unlikable. There may be people who might like his politics and okay, that's fine. You want to be a fascist, that's okay with me. But everybody got to be somewhere. But to the same extent, it seems to me that he's a relatively unlikable guy, and his numbers are showing that. He's a terrible candidate. He walks around going, nobody likes me, everybody hates me, I'm going to eat a worm, like kids used to do. But people don't like him, and he doesn't like people. It's very evident he does not like people. And that's why he's so bad at what they call commercial politics, retail politics, yeah, commercial.
Yeah.
And he's just not good at it because he doesn't like shaking people's hands and he doesn't like making small talk because it exposes that he doesn't know how. So I'm just looking at this story and saying to myself, I believe this guy. I really do.
Yeah.
It fits in with what we know of him and who he is, and I think that and it's the reason why DeSantis' campaign is literally imploding. He is cash poor right now. He is having trouble raising money. He just fired half of his staff. They're trying to remake him. But how do you remake a guy who thinks he's perfect?
Yeah.
Okay, and whose wife, who's the real brains of the outfit, thinks he was born on the eighth day. I mean, how do you do that? You can't change her and you can't change him. He'll be out of this race by after New Hampshire. He won't make it to South Carolina. Because he can't win in South Carolina with two South Carolinians on the ballot. He can't win in New Hampshire where Trump is very, very popular. And I don't think he's going to win in Iowa. I don't think anybody's going to win there, but if anybody does, it'll be Trump. So I don't see how he survives. The money's drying up. The shine is off the shoe. And I think that we can gladly say goodbye to Ron DeSantis, except for that means he's going to come back to Florida and probably propose and attempt to get passed a change in the state constitution to allow him to have a third term.
Mm.
That's his backup plan. I believe that to be true. So, and, Nostradamus and I were relatives, so I understand all that. What's going on with you, Brendan?
Well, I also find that story to be entirely plausible and in keeping with the character of people like Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump. What we're seeing really is that DeSantis is just he's a Trump clone, but he's humorless.
So's Trump. Where does Trump become funny?
Well, actually, I don't. There, you know, The thing about Donald Trump is when he makes people laugh, it is always at somebody else's expense, right?
That's true. That's
yeah,
very true.
But he does make people laugh. For all the wrong reasons.
The problem is he's not being funny when he says those things. He means them.
That's right.
People laugh at it because, you know, they laugh at cruelty. That's like watching, America's Funniest Home Videos. We sit around and watch people hurt themselves. Okay, and everybody laughs and thinks that's hysterical. It's one of the cruelest shows on television.
It is. Yeah. And so as usual, right, whenever we're talking about these people, we wind up talking, you know, sort of go from discipline to discipline, right? We go from politics to psychology. And but, you know, is it feasible, in keeping to envision Ron DeSantis sitting there smiling as other people suffer in his presence? So, yeah, I think it very much is.
Absolutely.
You know, what he does have in common with Donald Trump is they're both malignant narcissists, which is somebody who was starved for love when they were in their developmental, childhood.
Sounds like a theme. Sounds like the name of a song, "Starving for Love."
Yeah, right. Maybe we should write a song about the Republican Party, "Starving for Love."
Starving for love.
Yeah, and so they turn inwards, right, and provide the self love, and that's the beginning of this narcissist. I mean, everybody else.
Did they did a song about that too? It was called "Midnight Lover," wasn't it?
I don't know. The best line I ever heard about malignant narcissism is that to a malignant narcissist, every other human exists merely as a prop in their play. There is no value in another human being, and that's why they completely lack empathy. And, is it like a vacuum cleaner?
Sounds like it.
Yeah. What was that?
Okay. I don't know. I have no idea.
Neither do I.
Jeffrey, what were you doing? What are you doing over there?
No, it wasn't me. It's the English lady. She's probably doing her housework.
Okay. God. Is my little tirade so boring that you had to start vacuuming your house?
I'm not doing anything. I'm sitting here in my chair.
Yeah, right. Marilyn, what's he up to?
Marilyn's not here. Marilyn's over at St. Petersburg Beach with all of her friends from Graded High School in Brazil. Hello, everybody from Graded High School, if you're listening.
Wow, nice.
I've gone international.
Oh, God. The cruelty, off. Yes, the cruelty is easy to believe, for somebody who lacks empathy, obviously, we should contrast that to the person who currently holds that presidency, who's kind of the opposite of a narcissist, but Republicans just can't get over this. Kevin McCarthy now is talking about impeaching Joe Biden. This is the first time, probably the first time in American history, that the leadership of a political party has been threatening to impeach a president of the United States without having any idea what they're impeaching him for. But they just can't stand it. I say this every week. They can't stand that he's not corrupt, that he's not corruptible. They just can't envision that there's a politician like this. I suppose what they're going to impeach him for, I just saw another headline this morning. I didn't read the article. If anybody knows what this is about, they can enlighten me. But I just saw the headline and shook my head and moved on. There's a headline that a Democratic donor has purchased artwork from Hunter Biden. Okay?
Yeah.
Is that what they're going to impeach him for?
Yeah.
Am I missing something here? What, is that, is that
gonna,
criminal?
They're going to impeach him because his son, who is heir to the Biden crime family.
Yeah.
Okay. Apparently, the IRS agents who testified that they wanted stronger charges even admitted on cross-examination from Democrats that, yes, prosecutors overrule us all the time. We're basically hard asses. We want everything we can get, and we don't like it. And, by the way, this was started under the Trump DOJ, and they weren't interested in it either, were they? No, they weren't interested in it either.
Mm-hmm.
So what it really comes down to is you have whistleblowers that are just Republicans who work for the IRS and figured this is a good guy, we'll blow the whistle on DOJ. But in the process, blew the whistle on the Trump DOJ, who had that case for 2 years.
Right.
And then appointed a special prosecutor who now they're still saying that special prosecutor is still working on the case, but he's in the pocket of the Biden.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's from Delaware. Really? Okay. These are the things that they want to impeach him for. They want to impeach him because, like the Obama administration, you can't find anything.
Right.
So we're going to impeach him for being too honest.
Right.
Is there such a thing? I don't know. But McCarthy doesn't know what to do with himself. He's got 7 or 8 people who want to impeach Biden just for the sake of impeaching him.
Right.
He can't say no to anybody. Okay, he's like, I'm just a girl who can't say no. I'm just a girl who can't say no. Okay. and he can't say no to anybody because he'll lose a vote. He is literally, I thought John Boehner was weak. I think we all thought John Boehner was weak. I mean, you know, the guy cries too much. I mean, John Boehner was weak. And admittedly, he says it was like herding cats. McCarthy is even weaker. He can't stand up to anyone. He backs off of every criticism. All this so he can ride in a Secret Service Suburban to work every day. And he walks around because I'm third in line for the presidency. That would be the downfall of the Republic. Okay, that would absolutely be the downfall of the Republic. Weak personalities, check your gun at the door. I mean, literally, he's just awful. And he can't say no. They are going to hold hearings next year. There's no question. During the election year, they're going to hold hearings and try to pass an article of impeachment. So they can say, see, Biden was impeached too. Mm-hmm. The only difference is a week later when they deliver the articles, Schumer will have a motion to dismiss, and they will get the votes they need to dismiss that impeachment. There will be no trial because the grounds will be ridiculous. So, yeah, they're going to impeach him. That's what we do to everybody, don't you know, because you know, they did it to Donald, so we'll find something to do it to Biden, even though Donald isn't. If you want to find a crime family, take a look at a family portrait of the Trumps.
Yeah.
That's a crime family. Let's see. Another really interesting thing. My greatest hero in politics died in 1967. Or no, 68. June of 1968. He was my hero. He was the best of the three, and I'm talking about Robert F. Kennedy. He was the best of all of them. Was he brutal and was he ruthless? The answer is yes. But you have to be a little bit that way to become president of the United States. That's how he got his brother into the presidency. He had, I think, 13 children, if I'm not incorrect, 12 or 13. Kerry was the youngest.
Yeah.
Ethel was pregnant with her when Bobby died. And her older brother is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who has been resoundingly rejected by every Kennedy you talk to. Kerry said her brother is mentally ill.
Yeah.
He's crazy. He's gone down rabbit holes. And don't pay attention to anything he says because he literally doesn't know what comes out of his mouth. But it was important. It was important for Republicans to put him in front of the congressman from Ohio.
Oh, Jim Jordan.
Jim Jordan's committee to let him spew all of his conspiracy theories and all of his claims. And he comes out, and of course we all know he's an anti-vaxxer, and he's made several speeches and statements about being against vaccines. And he's asked by Democrats who play the video, who play the tape, how he's an anti-vaxxer. He says, I never said those things.
Right.
Then they ask him about the fact that he had said that COVID was a conspiracy to kill white people who were not Jewish, and black people. And that the only two people, the only persons on the earth who are actually resistant to COVID were Ashkenazi Jews and Chinese people. That's his conspiracy.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Let me explain something to you, RFK Jr. I'm an Ashkenazi Jew. I had COVID. What happened to my immunity?
I did too. I had it twice.
What's his name? Raskin, the congressman Raskin, said, I had it twice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an Ashkenazi Jew. He has no explanation. And he says, I never said that. So they play the video for him. I never said that. Okay. These are the kind of witnesses, you know,
yeah.
He ranks up there with the whistleblower who's got a federal indictment with three counts against him. And,
yeah,
and
right.
Comer, Congressman Comer, can't find him. First he said he couldn't find him because he didn't want to admit that the guy's, like, wanted by the FBI. And he's a Chinese agent, okay? These are their witnesses. The difference between that and what they did in the January 6th committee is these people that testified were nothing but Republicans. They were all people who worked for Trump. They were all insiders who knew what was going on. They were all Trump appointees. It wasn't like we dug up a couple of people who came up with conspiracy theories. These are the people that were listening to him tell them the conspiracy theories. And I'm still afraid of Hirschman. There's no way I'll never be there's no way that I will ever not be afraid of Hirschman. This guy still scares me. I have nightmares about this guy. Okay? But but they had to put RFK on. And I watched this Congressman Liu from California cross-examine him. And I mean, he just literally emulsified this guy. And he's the same guy that emulsified these IRS agents, too, these other whistleblowers. I mean, the problem is that Democrats use facts, and, you know, Republicans don't care about facts. They just literally don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever sounds good is true. Doesn't mean it is true. It just sounds good to me. It helps me sleep at night. Very strange.
Yeah.
What's the next thing on your list? I've been talking too long.
Well, you know who they are not going to call as a witness is Lev Parnas, who was a Rudy Giuliani henchman, right? Who wrote a letter to Jim Jordan saying, "Hey,
Russian oligarch. He was a wannabe oligarch." Okay.
Yeah. But he worked for Rudy. And you know, he was on the Trump train. And Rudy sent him overseas, including Ukraine, to turn over every rock.
Yep.
Right. And he wrote a letter to Jim Jordan saying, "Hey, pal, as long as you're having this hearing, you might want to call me as a witness because I can come in there and testify that I tried everything to dig up dirt on the Biden family, and guess what? There's nothing.
Mm.
We looked. But no, they don't want to talk to him. No, they want to talk to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., right? Who is mentally ill, clearly. I mean, you don't have to have a PhD or an MD to diagnose it. This is what they're spending their time on.
Talk about emptying the clown car.
Yeah.
Okay, the guy's going to come on. Next thing you know, they're going to bring in Bozo the Clown, who's going to say that I used to be a star, but thanks to the Bidens, I'm not a star anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I hope they just, you know, I would say to Republicans, just keep on, go ahead, keep doing it. And go ahead and impeach President Biden, too, while you're at it. Go ahead. And the Americans, we'll just have to decide when we've had enough of this. You know? But keep doing what you're doing, Republicans.
Yeah. You can always tell when McCarthy's lying.
His lips are moving?
He's quoting Marjorie Taylor Greene and Comer. And so the minute he starts pulling out all these quotes, you know that he's lying. Because Jim Jordan wouldn't know the truth if it hit him in the face.
Right.
I really, truly mean that. He just can't. He has a hard time looking in the mirror. It's hard for him to not be welcome on the Ohio State campus anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all you had to do was tell the truth, Jim, but you couldn't do it. And now you're persona non grata at Ohio State. He gets up in the morning, and when he buys shirts, he always buys them about an inch too short because it's easier to roll up the sleeves.
Right.
At
least he keeps his shirt on, unlike RFK Jr.
Well, that's true. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he also keeps his pants on, unlike Hunter Biden. I got to say that. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, the truth is, see, we tell the truth here. The truth is the truth. Okay. I can just see Joe Biden saying, you know, son, I want you to be careful, please, and please keep your pants on. I mean,
Okay, Dad.
Okay, you're in your 50s, pal. Come on, enough's enough. Okay. Let's see. Let's talk about before we run out of time. We got to talk about Donny Boy. Oh, Donny Boy, the fight. Donny Boy. First of all, I'm going to repeat what I said this morning. I did an interview this morning on WIOD in Miami. It's a talk radio station, has been for God knows how long. I go back to it in the 80s, so it's been that way. They got a new guy that does the morning show. And I was asked to be on to talk about Aileen, commonly referred to as Luce Cannon. And wanted to know what and they knew what I was going to say because I put out a couple of papers on this and releases and been on the air criticizing her rather resoundingly. She issued a trial order last week that we didn't have a chance to talk about last week. That for all intents and purposes, you know, I was asked, well, she split the baby. Trump wanted December of next year, and the prosecutor wanted December of this year. And so they say, well, she split the baby. Well, here's my answer to that. Judges aren't there to split the baby. They aren't mediators. They're not negotiating differences. Their job is to make the system work. Their job is to follow the rules and move their cases through the system. That's their job. Being fair, but being fair doesn't mean splitting the baby. And the truth of the matter is that the law is not always fair. It's not supposed to be. And so as a result of which, she splits the baby, which you may remember a couple of years ago when I started talking about young judges, I said that for whatever the reasons are, they don't want anybody to be angry at them. So they give everybody a little something. You know, I'm going to deny your motion, counsel, but I'll give you this and a little bit of this instead, so they can justify their billing and everything else. Elected judges do that. Young elected judges do that. Federal judges don't have to do that. That's why federal judges, people don't like going to federal court because there's no influence there.
Mm-hmm.
They do things their way and only their way. And Aileen Cannon had the opportunity at the very start of that hearing a week ago to look at Donald Trump's lawyers and say, I told you a month ago to have your applications in for security clearances by June the 20th. Rhetorically, I'm going to ask you, why you didn't do them until just yesterday. I am not used to telling people what to do twice. And if this is the conduct we're going to have, I am not going to deviate from whatever deadlines I set, and that will not inure to the detriment of the government. It will inure to the detriment of your client if you don't do what you're supposed to do in the time I tell you to do it. And if he loses his motions in limine because you didn't file them, he loses his motions in limine. If he loses this motion or that motion, so be it. You're all very experience, you have big staff, you can comply with what I tell you to do. That's how she should have opened that hearing, to let everybody in that very, very, very small courtroom know who's in charge. But she didn't do that. Mm-hmm. She never even raised that issue. So they have this hearing, and she decides to split the baby. But it really wasn't. Because by setting it in May, all it takes is 4 or 5 weeks of extension from that date, and we don't try this case till January 25. Because the excuse will be, We're 2 weeks away from the Republican National Convention. My client has to be there. He can't be here and be there at the same time. Oh, yeah, and after the convention, he's now the candidate. And we're within 90 days of the election, and that goes, even the government has to admit it violates their guidelines. So see you in January, Judge. Have a nice summer. If you really want to try it in May, you know when you set it for trial? In February. And you built in the delay time so you can start the case in May, like you want to, picking a jury on May 14th.
Wow.
Now, she has an additional problem, huge, huge problem, because, you know, Brenda and I deal with the media a lot. You know, we give what's known as sound. We do interviews with a lot of radio and television. And I've had the same question asked, do you really think it's going to go to trial in May? And I'm being honest and telling you that unless she, as they put it, grows a pair, the answer is no. And they ask me really what she should have done and what she was really doing. And number one, I think she's scared to go to trial because she knows she's in over her head. She is ill-prepared, far too inexperienced, and doesn't have the intellectual depth that's necessary to handle this case. And I think she knows it. But her ego won't let her give it up. Okay? Her arrogance will not let her give it up. That's what's going on here. And I just don't see it possibly going to trial. I've looked at this trial schedule. There is literally, in my opinion, having litigated criminal cases in federal court, I'm going to tell you there is no reason why this case can't be ready for trial on the date that she set. But it won't be. And she will do nothing to make it be. That's just the way it is. Donald got what he wanted, and she made sure he got what he wanted. Someone asked me today, do you really think that she's just all in for Trump? And I said, basically, there are people who will say that, who feel that way. I said, I will not enumerate myself, but will not deny that I might be one of those people. But I won't go that far. But she's obviously scared to go to trial. She doesn't want to be first, and she doesn't want to be the first person to say he's going to prison. And that, there's nothing worse than a judge that's scared to go to trial. It's like the old adage when I used to fly airplanes that, you know, there's one thing worse than being on the ground and wishing you were flying. That's flying and wishing you were on the ground. Okay?
All right.
And that's literally what she is. I cannot stress enough that I've seen this schedule. And as long as she issues her rulings timely, and she holds their feet to the fire on the deadlines that she has set without extension, just come right out and say, I'm granting no extensions for any reason. She can get this case to trial in May, but she doesn't want to try it in May, and it won't go to trial in May unless, like I said, the criticism she's getting from her fellow judges of the SDFL finally sink in. She's an embarrassment to the Southern District of Florida. She really is. She's just a typical young judge. I want to make everybody happy. Not your job. Job's not to make people happy. So, what do you got to say about that, Brendan?
Well, if she starts this game of granting continuances to Trump, Does Jack Smith have, an avenue to go to the 11th Circuit?
No. He has another avenue.
What's that?
Just issue indictments in other places.
Yeah.
Indict him in Bedminster. Mm-hmm. Indict him in Washington. And say, I'm writing off the case down in Florida. I'm going forward with the more serious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be at least one more indictment coming out of Washington, and I think it's going to be superseded somewhere along the line. That means an amendment. For people who don't know, a superseding indictment is an amended indictment that includes additional charges that supersedes the one that was already issued. But he will, I think he will indict Donald, and then he's on probably not the seditious conspiracy or the RICO counts that he probably has in his pocket. And then he's going to hold that indictment up and say, Donald, we have given you time after time an opportunity to settle this case like you settle everything. Don't tell me you don't settle your cases because you just settled one last week. You settle all your cases because you don't want to go to trial and you don't want to testify in front of a jury. So the truth of the matter is, here's this indictment. I got you on this. This is a simple case that will take less than 2 weeks to try. And we're ready for trial now, and we can try this case in the next 2-3 months.
Gentlemen, bear with me a moment because it looks like we've got a caller probably for you. Let's bring the caller in.
No, it's actually it's actually Lamy calling on the other line.
Close.
Okay. Good morning, caller.
Yeah, I think it's me. I dropped out. And so I called back.
Oh,
in.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize that. Okay.
Welcome back, Brendan.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
We didn't even know you were gone. That's how much we missed you.
I know. I when I called back in, I was like, okay, good. Jeff's still talking. So, we're fine.
So
nobody
I
will even know.
That, no, I think that it's going to be interesting to see what he does. But, Bedminster is an easy one.
Yeah.
He could indict him in New Jersey and go to trial next week. That's probably a little bit too quick, but he could go to it's an easy one. It's the box with the document and his own voice being, on the tape.
Mm-hmm.
The government rests. We'll see what happens. I have to nail Aileen Cannon this morning. She's a little girl with a black robe. And I know people say that's sexist. I'm sorry. But, it's almost like I'm watching the Barbie movie. So all I can tell you is that she's ill-prepared. She's in over her head. And if she got off, there are three other judges in the West Palm Beach courthouse who are incredibly, incredibly experienced and intellectually able to handle this case. And it won't start in May. It'll be over in May. They won't care about the primaries. They'll say, we're going to trial. So we'll see what happens. What else is on your list, pal?
Well, let's definitely talk about the newest model of authoritarianism for Republicans to try to follow, old Bibi Netanyahu over in Israel, eliminating judicial review, which in our
any
system,
kind of review.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, but this would be akin to, in the United States, getting rid of the most famous case in American history, Marbury versus Madison,
yes.
which established that courts are there to do their job. They have, and part of their job is telling the legislative branch, Congress, and the president, and other state actors around the United States, right? It's the job of the judicial branch to tell them when they've behaved in a way that's unconstitutional. And to undo an act of the Congress or the president. And, of course, courts do this all the time. They strike down laws. They strike down Biden's executive orders, right? This is, and of course, in this country, governmental actors honor that and the role of the court.
Except for the
in our
state
system.
Of Alabama.
Yeah, we've got to get to that too, right? But before we get to Alabama, which, yeah, basically just flipped off the Supreme Court, you said this morning, and I agree with this, and I think we should explore it a little bit, you know, what Netanyahu is doing in Israel, which, again, is he got rid of that system where courts can tell the government, no, you can't do that, is a blueprint. And it's very much akin to what Donald Trump has announced and his people have announced that they are going to do in a second Trump term, is turn the American system upside down.
That is their intention. Bibi Netanyahu is a bad guy. He always had, and the one thing that they have in common, and I think you said this morning, the one thing that Netanyahu and Trump have in common are they are incredibly narcissistic.
Mm-hmm.
They both believe that they are their country.
Right.
And that what's good for them doesn't have to be good for the country because they are the country. Mm-hmm. Bibi's been around too long. He's too power hungry. He does not believe in democracy. Remember, they have a parliamentary system. They don't have two houses of Congress. They don't have a constitution.
Right. Right.
The constitution is, excuse me, the constitution is what the Supreme Court says it is and what Parliament says it is. And because it's a parliamentary system where he builds a coalition and has the majority, he basically is uncontrolled. And that's the way he wants it. The Supreme Court of Israel operated on a reasonableness standard. If they found what the government did was unreasonable, they say it's unreasonable and you can't do that. He found that system to be giving them too much power, giving unelected judges too much power over what we do. That's what he said. And his attitude is that I'm restoring democracy. The majority rules unchecked and uncontrolled. And that's not the case. Or at least it is now, but it wasn't before. Now, some lawyers have filed an action in Israel for the Supreme Court of Israel to find that the law that was passed reducing their power to be unreasonable.
Right.
And now you have a true constitutional crisis in Israel. The most powerful people in Israel are not the members of the Knesset. They are the members of the military. And the military is controlled by part-time soldiers and pilots. Everybody's in the reserves in Israel. And the best pilots that they have are all reservists, and they're all saying, we will not fly. We didn't join the Air Force and become reservists to help with the defeat of democracy.
Right.
And they're refusing to fly. The doctors are not working today. You cannot see a doctor unless it's a really true emergency in a hospital. No doctor's appointments today. I believe all the educators will go on strike soon. And more soldiers and more military people will go on strike. What are they going to do, put them all in jail? So I don't know what Bibi does. Now he says, well, I'll hold back on some of my other reforms for the judiciary. And they're all saying, no, those mean nothing compared to what you've done. You want to be King BB the First.
Mm-hmm.
We're a democracy. And you're destroying our democracy. So he's got problems. And Israel cannot afford to be this divided. And they are as divided as our country is, probably more so. And I think the Israelis are going to fight back. And Bibi's going to find his ass out on the ground. He's only doing this to protect himself so he won't be put in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Where have you heard that one before?
Amazing.
I think American Jews have to rise up and say, Bibi, we're not giving you any more money. Don't look to us, the United Jewish Federation, to raise money for you to be a dictator. Not giving another dime. I'm not even going to put the $20 for planting a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Congress gives them $4 billion a year. Maybe it's time that $4 billion became $2 billion. Let Bibi feel the pain. You know, for an American Jew to say that, that's really something. And I'm saying it. But he's just destroying that country. And now there's a bill in front of the Knesset that puts study of the Torah as important as serving in the military. It will be required that you study the Torah. They're turning it into a religious autocracy. Sorry, this is not ancient days of King David and King Solomon. So it's bad over here. It's really bad.
Yeah. It's bad over here, too.
You know, and it's bad over here, and we're fighting it. Okay? Some good news. Ron DeSantis is out of money. His whole campaign is falling apart. Like I said, I'm only afraid he's going to go back to Tallahassee and ask for an amendment to our Constitution in Florida, give him a third term. Let's see, what else do we got here?
As we're talking about Ron DeSantis,
sure.
We're headed in the same direction. The new education guidelines in Florida that are to teach children that slavery had some benefits.
Yeah. No, not some benefits. What it says is that slaves benefited from what they did when they were enslaved.
Right.
It gave them skills, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's supposed to be taught in black history to all students, including black students, in the public schools. That's the criteria. Seriously? You benefited from every time that whip hit your back. You benefited from your children being removed from you and sold. You didn't even want to be here in the first place. You benefited from all the people that died in the slave ships coming over. You benefited from the way that you were treated day in and day out, doing hard labor like you were in prison and being treated like cattle to breed. And Ron DeSantis said what? Do you remember what he said, Brandy?
Yep. I didn't do it. Like he's a 3-year-old who just got caught with his hands in the cookie jar.
Yeah, I didn't do it. What he said was, well, gee, you know, when they were freed, they learned skills like becoming a blacksmith.
Right.
Really? And when did picking cotton become a skill? When did planting become a skill? I'm sorry. Wrong thing to say, Ron. Wrong thing to do, Ron. And then he said, I didn't do it. The Department of Education did it.
Right.
Now, all the Department of Education people work for him.
Mm-hmm.
He appointed them all. But he didn't do it. The Department of Education did it.
How's that for leadership? Right.
That's owning it.
I didn't do it.
That's owning it, Ron. Okay.
Yeah.
That's owning it. Can I tell you? I can't believe he did that. I mean, that and the bill that is now decided that not just minors can't get transgender surgery and treatment in the state of Florida, now adults can't get it either. That's the bill he's proposed.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he's saying, gay people, I want you gone. Transgender people, I want you gone. Brown people, I want you gone. Black people, you can stay, but understand you're not really full citizens of the state. Because we're going to do away with the 14th Amendment. Okay. So here we go. Welcome, white people. Bring your money. We have lots of trailer parks for you. You know, pick up that double wide and head on down here. He's going to say he wants to be, despite Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia, and Louisiana, he wants to be the whitest state in the country. That's what he wants. And we're all purebred down here. Good thing I'm planning on leaving, isn't it? So let's see. Are we done? Are we out of time?
No, it sounded like you were excited to talk about something, and then I cut you off to talk about this. What were you thinking?
That's okay. I was going to – there are two things I got left, and we can't cover them both. One was talking about the people that – the plan that Donald has for the country, but that can wait until next week. We'll talk about his plan to take over the country that he has – they've announced. I mean, they're not hiding.
Yeah.
They've announced their plan to take over the country and do away with, you know, any oversight at all.
Mm-hmm.
But we never really talked about Donald's rewrite of the Presidential Records Act.
Yeah.
He has declared that it isn't what it says. It's what he says it is. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that can wait, too. That's a little esoteric and a little in-depth. You had something else on your list, didn't you?
Yeah, the Alabama case. I guess we can cover that quickly.
Yes, we can. I'd like to dispense with Alabama quickly, but that's
not... Yeah, right. It's, so the Supreme Court recently ordered... the state legislature in Alabama to redraw its map, and a kind of a surprise move, right? Upheld the Voting Rights Act, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act.
Yeah, was it Section 5, right?
Well, Section 5 is the one they got rid of.
Section 5 or 2. Oh, Section 2, yeah. Section 2.
Yeah. And upholding the act said Alabama has violated it, no surprise there, and ordered the state to redraw districts and create at least one more district that's either majority African-American or something very close to it, words to that effect.
Restore
Alabama
one black
did,
district and another one. It was two.
Yeah.
Restore the black one black district and the majority one, and then one that is close to being a majority. It can be like a purple one, for lack of a better way to put it.
Right. Instead, they created one purple.
What did they say? What did they say? What did they say? What did they say? Tell me.
Who, Alabama?
Yeah. What did they say?
Yeah. Yeah, so that instead of doing that, they created one, what you're referring to as a purple district, where African-Americans are about half the population, and then another district where they're 39%, which, of course, is nowhere near what they were told to do. So it's open defiance.
Wasn't that the map they already had?
Yeah, so that's open defiance of the Supreme Court, and now we're going to find out what the Supreme Court's going to do about it. But it is, again, you see the common thread running through. Trump wants to get rid of oversight. Bibi Netanyahu wants to get rid of oversight. And apparently the state of Alabama is not going to accede to oversight either. Right? They've just decided to openly defy a U.S. Supreme Court order.
The new Alabama motto, the words that they're going to put on their flag, go pound sand.
Right.
Don't tread on me with somebody already had that one.
So they have
bars and stars in the words, go pound sand.
Yeah.
Okay. It's the perfect flag. Okay. They're just openly defying, and the question will be, will the 11th Circuit tell them to go pound sand?
Right.
And do it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
This is the story was that McCarthy called down there and said, "I need those seats.
Yeah.
Right. If we're going to stay in the majority, I need those seats. Like I need the two seats that are coming back in Florida." Or the three seats that are coming back in North Carolina, or the two seats in Louisiana. I need those seats. I lose those seats. We're not going to be in the majority anymore. So the Attorney General said, well, this is in compliance. Not exactly mm-hmm. what they told them not to do. Okay. And the 11th Circuit has to do it quickly and briefly and just say, okay, we're sending this back to the district court, and the district court's going to draft your lines for you. We don't trust you anymore. And these mm-hmm. are the lines you will enforce. They're just trying to get through the 24 election with a majority, that's all.
Right.
So in the meantime, if they're smart. But then again, this is the same state that sent Tommy Tuberville to Washington. One of the world's, probably the worst major coach ever in Alabama history, in Auburn history. Okay, but the bottom line is that, they sent Tommy Tuberville to Washington. See how that's working out for us.
Mm-hmm.
So, be that as it may, that action by the Alabama legislature, and the governor's going to sign it.
Yeah.
Because she does everything she's told to do. So we'll see what happens. But I think the district court will handle it quickly. I think the 11th Circuit will handle it quickly, and there will be no appeal to the United States Supreme Court. And the district court will draft the lines, and that will be the court order, and that's the end of it. And there'll be no stay on that order. They can appeal it, but there'll be no stay.
Right.
But, that's the way. And DeSantis better pay attention because that's what he's going to do in Florida.
Yeah.
He's going to do what he's told. Harvard-trained lawyer. I don't have to do what they tell me to. What else is going on? Are we over time?
We are now over time, yep.
Who cares? We're in overtime. Who cares? Yeah. Do you care, Hezzy?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, you are. You're a good guy. Like I said, you're an all-around good guy, Hez. Okay? That's the best way to explain it. We got through a lot of stuff. Okay.
It was a lot.
We all have meetings. We all have meetings today, so.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I will talk to you all soon. Well, first of all, we will talk to all of you next week.
Yeah.
And, Brendan, I guess I'll talk to you a little bit later.
Sounds good.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear your health is still good. Keep taking care of yourself, please. Okay?
Absolutely.
We love you. We love you.
Love you back.
Okay? Okay. Take care, guys.
Okay. Take care.
All right.
Have a great
week.
Have a great day and a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Well, there we are with both gentlemen, Brendan Beery, Jeffrey Swartz, both with Cooley Law School based in the Tampa campus. All right, so let's go on and do a couple of more things, which hopefully you'll find interesting. Israel passes its first law weakening the Supreme Court following months of civil strife, and this is written by Ben Sales or Salas. Israel's government has passed a law restricting the Supreme Court's ability to strike down laws, the first piece of a proposed overhaul of the country's judiciary that has led to massive street protests and a growing movement of civil disobedience. The vote, which was boycotted by the opposition in Israel's parliament, the Knesset, is a landmark moment in a conflict that has consumed Israel since the beginning of the year and drawn the attention and criticism of world leaders and a range of diaspora Jewish organizations. It is the first measure of the right-wing government's proposed judicial overhaul, which has aimed to sap the power and independence of the Supreme Court to be enacted into law. So that proposal, or that proposed package of legislation, has drawn hundreds of thousands of Israelis to weekly street protests and has led more than 10,000 veterans to pledge to boycott their reserve duty. Proponents of the overhaul say it will curb an overly activist Supreme Court. Its critics say the weakening that weakening Israel's judicial system will endanger its standing as a democracy and will put minority rights at risk. Among the opponents of the overhaul is President Joe Biden, who has suggested that its passage could damage the U.S.-Israel relationship. So what do you need to know about the fight over Israel's court system? The law was passed on Monday, and it bars the Supreme Court from striking down government decisions it deems unreasonable. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu doubled down on passing the law despite the growing protest. This is an extraordinary moment, Justice Minister Yair Levin, one of the texts of the overhaul, said in a speech following the law's passage, quote, "We have taken a first step in the historic, important process of fixing the judicial system and returning the authority that has been taken from the government and the Knesset over the course of long years." As the law was being voted upon, thousands of protesters converged on the Knesset grounds, with some pitching tents in a nearby park. Netanyahu's opponents in parliament vowed to keep fighting despite the legislative defeat on Monday. Quote, "Believe in yourselves," Yair Lapid, the centrist leader of the opposition, wrote on Twitter to protesters, quote, "Believe in your clear and strong voice. Believe that the future belongs to whoever never gives up," end quote. Reaction among American Jewish organizations was swift. The centrist American Jewish Committee expressed, quote, "profound disappointment," end quote, over the passage of the legislation, saying in a statement that it was, quote, "gravely concerned about the long-term impact of continued unilateral efforts," end quote, "to change Israel's judicial system." So this is going to be a major, major problem. Okay. This, I think, I think that basically covers most of the issues and concerns with regard to that. We'll see where this all goes, and we'll see what happens with regard to that. Bear with me a moment here as we go on to some other issues, which hopefully you'll find of interest. I want to go over first to Yonkers Tribune. We'll cover some domestic stuff, stuff that's going on in the city of Yonkers. Bear with me a moment. Okay. Let me just quickly look here. This is an editorial that I wrote early this morning. I was in the hospital yesterday for surgery from 6 o'clock in the morning. I thought I was going to be the first patient, but I was the second patient of the day. And they put in a special stent in my heart. So it went from the groin all the way into the heart and placed there. To be honest with you, I didn't feel a thing, and I was under no sedation whatsoever, which was unbelievable. And the point is, they even requested to know if I wanted to take a Valium, but it just didn't seem that it would be appropriate for the type of procedure. What this stent is so, so thin. And once it was placed in the heart, I was shocked when they said it's already in place and they were pulling out. And what I found fascinating about it is that I tested myself today on a special pillow that captures what the stent is saying. And what the stent is saying, and it's all done through the internet, which is unbelievable, that it measures the amount of fluid in my heart because I suffer from congestive heart failure. I've had like a triple bypass, 3 heart attacks. So you can imagine what it is. Everyone keeps saying, how do I stay energized? And I don't feel a loss of energy whatsoever. Never have. And I don't know why that is, because everyone says like, wow, this is amazing. So the good Lord has blessed me with other things to compensate for my weak heart. But what's fascinating about this is that this technology is so absolutely mind-boggling. It's just amazing how far technology has come forward. I think if it was 10 years ago and I needed to go through this process, it wouldn't be available. The technology wasn't available. And there would be no way of recognizing what's what. But the point is that by measuring the amount of fluid in my heart, or the fact the amount of fluid that accumulates in the heart because my heart cannot expel it, will reveal, because of the stent, as much as 2 weeks prior to a conceivable congestive heart failure, which would mean, you know, a total heart attack. And when they recognize that through the internet, which I forward to them every day, and today was the first day that I was able to use this new contraption, because it was only installed yesterday. So today was the first day to use it. What's fascinating about it all is that they got the message. It was absolutely amazing. I was like overwhelmed of how difficult it was going to be to put it all together, but it worked. I was like in shock, but it really worked, and I lost my anxiety level. It was reduced to a calm state, and there it is. So I have to do this for the rest of my life in order to be able to recognize if my heart is failing, and this will be recognized by the stent. It is so, so small. Lengthwise, I think it isn't even, I don't think it's even a quarter of an inch. It's probably, I don't even think it's a quarter of an inch long. And it is so, so narrow. It is absolutely amazing. And so, I guess it's new technology, and hopefully those in need will have the capacity to get it on, as they say. Well, let's look at something that's really happened. I wrote an editorial. I was exhausted. I was there for 6 o'clock. I left 5 o'clock in the morning to get there for the first surgery, because initially I was slated to be the first patient, but for some reason or another, whatever the reason is, and it's no issue on my part, someone else was taken before me, even though I arrived there in time. So there was no problem whatsoever. And eventually they got to me, which was fine. And but then I didn't get home till about 8 o'clock at night. So can you imagine? It was 5 in the morning till 8 o'clock at night. That was my scene yesterday. And I was exhausted from the whole process, being up for so many hours. It wasn't that I felt weak, but I didn't think that I would have the capacity to write well. So I said, you know what, let me read this beat and write about it this morning, which is exactly what I did. I woke up at about 5:30 in the morning, maybe 5 o'clock in the morning, not quite sure. And this is what I wrote. It's entitled Pinion, Exacts Legal Consequence for Political Entitlement Gone Awry. This is written by me, Hezzy Harris. It's what we call the Hezzatorial. The Hezzatorial was a name that was given to me by the readers years ago, far back as about 23 years ago when we began the YonkersTribune.com website. And they suggested with a name like Hezzy, I could turn it into Hezzatorial when I would write my opinion pieces, and I adopted it because my readers were quite astute, and it never dawned on me even to consider creating such a term, but it has become well known in Westchester County government, and it's known as a Hezzatorial. So this is what I wrote. Political standards have been flouted, alas, tolerated among many local communities, both far and wide, on both national and international landscapes. The political environment has long spawned the riches, quote-unquote, of the haves, quote-unquote, who want and demand more than those considered less, quote, deserving, unquote, who are denied similar benefits. Envy has long fought, undermine lofty and ethical standards. There has always been a time when people aspired to and lived a forthright existence. Religious teachings eclipsed wrongdoing by revealing what was acceptable and what was not. Each of the Abrahamic religions preached and taught standards long accepted, no matter the denominations. Unfortunately, for too many, righteousness has been eclipsed by the seduction of unearned wealth. Not all who are well-to-do stray from the ethical standards taught for millennia. There are many who walk the straight and narrow, quote-unquote, despite the enticements that cause and continue to cause others to be weakened by their envy. The days when ethical standards were taught by clergy, grandparents, and parents weaned our children on what was, quote, right, end quote, and what regarded as wrong, quote, end quote. The present is fraught with those who no longer gravitate to their chosen house of worship to live and extol the tenets and virtues of their respective faiths. Money and wealth have become the panacea to which too many have succumbed as they cry out, quote, why am I forsaken, end quote. No matter how one chooses to attain their desired place in society, we all need to look in the mirror to see who we are and to change to that which we know is a righteous path for ourselves and our progeny, relatives, friends, and associates. Perhaps we have forgotten to take pride in what we are capable of achieving, while each of us have different strengths and weaknesses. Working to maintain the former and embellishing the latter ethically is a path we must strive to aspire to and achieve to the best of our ability. Envy and entitlement is too often the roadmap to loss. Former Westchester County legislator Christopher Johnson's conduct can attest to his loss by recognizing that he had to step down from office, and which was also the cause for his wife to be dismissed from her employment. Alas, this telling is the reality they each brought upon themselves. They will suffer mentally, financially, and other manner. They lost their way. Perhaps time and circumstance will place them on a path of future redemption. We wish them both success in their endeavor. So that was the editorial that I wrote this morning. And hopefully you will concur that it's valid and pertinent. So let's look at some other issues as well. Bear with me a moment. And I'd like to read this to you as well. This is an article by Brian Golden. Brian Golden wrote a book called Dare to Live Without Limits. And this writing is entitled Breaking the Rules by Brian Golden. We all grow up being indoctrinated with rules that limit us. The purveyors of this information are not malicious. They are simply passing along what they themselves have been taught. You are probably aware of one or more of the following rules. Decide for yourself if you have been limited by any of them. Don't rock the boat. This rule encourages conformity. Conformity offers a protection from criticism. But those who succeed don't care about criticism. They become adept at new or better ways of doing things in spite of opinions. Nice guys finish last. According to this maxim, being nice is the recipe for failure. Therefore, if you want to succeed, you may have to compromise your ethics. In actuality, those who consistently do the best are nice, considerate, and concerned about the well-being of others. It takes money to make money. There are so many examples of wealthy individuals that started from scratch that it's odd this rule still persists at all. It's not what you know, but who you know. Granted, networking with the right people can accelerate goal achievement. However, if you connect with the right people but have no expertise, any edge will be lost, and you will develop a reputation as a fraud. Don't have to start with connections. With persistence, you will meet the right people. Be concerned about what others think. You have to do what is right for you. It doesn't matter what others say, think, or do. Follow your own path. Don't take chances. Living is taking a chance. Nothing is guaranteed. If something doesn't work out as desired, adjust your strategy and keep doing. Keep going. Virtually all achievement is the result of taking chances. It's the way things have always been. If mankind had followed this rule, we would still be living in the Stone Age. Doing things differently leads to improvements. Ask questions. Don't perpetuate behavior that makes no sense. Good things never last. Life has its ups and downs. With the right attitude, effort, action, and perseverance, you can have a lot more good than bad. Take an active role in what happens to you. Don't settle for what you don't want. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. This isn't necessarily a bad rule. The danger is that it detracts from your focus. Often it is better to put your eggs in one basket and then put all of your energy into guarding that basket. You have to be lucky to succeed. Of course, luck helps, but the harder you work, the more luck you have. Luck determines lottery winners. Effort determines success in life. Passively sitting around, waiting for circumstances to improve, won't yield any positive results. Then we have money is the root of all evil. People use this one to justify why they are not earning as they would like. The original statement is that Muslim money is the root of all evil. Money is simply a tool. It can be used for constructive or destructive purposes. Money is earned as a result of one's service to others. Don't daydream. Dreams are the foundation for all accomplishment. Thoughts of situations that don't yet exist are a great motivator. Dreams give a person a vision of what could be. All that has been accomplished throughout history started with a dream. Don't hesitate to break any rules that limit your success. If a rule doesn't help you or someone else, ignore it. So, for those who were, impressed by the words of Brian Golden, who wrote this article, please recognize that his latest book, Dare to Live Without Limits, is available, and you can visit briangolden.com, BryanGolden.com, so www.briangolden.com, or your bookstore. Brian is a management consultant, motivational speaker, author, and adjunct professor, and you can email him as well at bryan@columnist.com. columnist.com. So brian@columnist.com. And his work is copyrighted, naturally, by Brian Golden. So just a very, very compelling essay. And it's posted on the Yonkers Tribune website. And, of course, you can get his book through any bookstore or the online services. Dare to Live Without Limits by Brian Golden. Okay, so let's look at some other issues and concerns. Bear with me a moment here. Let me just quickly look to see if I've covered the major articles on the website. Oh, yes, this is important as well. The question here is what to do when your campaign is in complete chaos. And this is written by Dr. Louis Perron, who is based out of Zurich, Switzerland. And she speaks English fluently, as well as German and Switzerdeutsch and French as well. So this is his writing. And he writes, one of the most underestimated factors in a campaign is discipline. Election campaigns are extremely chaotic by nature. If you formulate a clear plan and strategy on the outset, it helps tremendously in managing the chaos once a campaign starts for good. In an election campaign, everything is geared towards the top candidate. It happens sometimes in different wings of a campaign team fight each other or for the attention of the top candidate. Attention is, however, a zero-sum game. Some candidates fail to establish maintain order. For others, it's their very leadership style to pitch various factions against each other. And this is almost always bound for failure as the top candidate or party leader plays a crucial role in demanding and establishing internal discipline. If I'm faced with a situation where a campaign is in total chaos, and time is limited, I try to at least focus on the common opponent. Complete chaos where everyone is fighting the other side is a lot better than complete chaos fighting each other. You can follow Louis Perron, Dr. Louis Perron, on Twitter to get daily takeaways on election campaigns. And just so you know, Dr. Louis Perron is a political scientist, consultant, and TDX speaker based in Switzerland. He has won dozens of election campaigns in various countries. Absolutely stupendous, and I'm honored that he writes for us as well at the Yonkers Tribune. He found us, to be honest with you. I never beseeched him, and I'm absolutely astounded that he was able to find us. This is years ago. I was just blown away when I first heard from him. And I speak German as well, but not super Deutsch, you know, German, from German. We never really converse in German, though. It's always English. So just fascinating. And because he writes in English, he's exceptional in his writing, that's for sure. Okay. One second. Want to move on to some other concerns. Bear with me a moment here. Okay, let's just see what other articles we've already posted, which hopefully you'll find of relevance. One moment here. Okay, I think this is really quite important. It's a public notice. Evidently, there's a local law amending Chapter 75 of the Code of the City of Yonkers entitled Police, quote unquote, by amending Article 6 entitled Public Nuisance Abatement. Notice is hereby given that the City Council of the City of Yonkers has adopted the above-mentioned legislation that amends subsection A2 of section 75-23 of Article 6 thereof entitled, quote, public nuisance abatement, quote unquote, to update the penal code designation for offenses involving cannabis. The penalty for violation of this ordinance is as follows. Subsection 75-28, enforcement of the order. A, no sooner than 5 business days after the issuance of the order pursuant to subsection 75-25 and subsection 75-28, and upon the directive of the commissioner, officers of the Yonkers Police Department are authorized to act upon and enforce such order. B, where the commissioner where the commissioner closes a premises pursuant to this article, such closing shall be for such period as the commissioner may direct, but in no event shall the closing be for a period of greater than 1 year from the issuance of the order. Now let us see. Upon receiving a copy of the order issued by the commissioner, pursuant to subsections 75-25 and 75-28, the Corporation Council shall maintain a special proceeding to affix a civil penalty in the amount of up to $5,000 and to collect any costs and expenses incurred by the City of Yonkers in commencing the proceeding, closing the premises, and in relocating any occupants on the premises. The Corporation Council shall file a notice of pendency of proceeding in the Westchester County Clerk's Office. Now, the D part. The judgment in such proceeding in favor of the City of Yonkers shall establish the penalty sued for with costs and disbursement as a lien upon the premises, subject only to taxes, assessments, water rates, mortgages, and mechanics liens as they exist thereon, end quote. Well, the complete text of the ordinance is on file and may be examined at the office of the city clerk at City Hall, 40 South Broadway, Yonkers, New York, 10701. This was dated on July 18th, 2023, by Vincent Spano, the city clerk. Now, one second here. Okay, I think that was really very, very pertinent. Now, bear with me a moment. Go back. One second here. Okay, I think now we're going to be able to move on to some international news. This is really quite interesting. The current heat is almost impossible without climate change, so says a study. The hot spells in parts of Europe and the United States, as well as the Orient, would not have occurred without human-made global warming, researchers say. And this month is likely the hottest the Earth has seen in about 120,000 years, according to some. Human-made climate change appears to be overwhelmingly to blame for intense, intense heat waves affecting several world regions this month, a study released on Tuesday had said. In a rapid analysis of the current high temperatures, particularly in southern Europe and the south and the United States southwest, researchers from the World Weather Attribution Group concluded that the deadly heat would have been virtually impossible without the continuing buildup of warming gases in the air. So far, the world has warmed 1.2 degrees Celsius, which is 2.2 degrees Fahrenheit, above pre-industrial levels, and scientists have warned that going beyond 1.5 degrees Celsius will have catastrophic consequences for human civilization. And we are already beyond beyond 1.5 degrees Celsius. We are at the point of 2.2 degrees Celsius. We're very close. We're at 1.2 degrees Celsius presently. And if we go beyond 1.2 degrees Celsius, we're going to fry, I guess. It's going to be the end of a catastrophe to human civilization. If it rises probably to a little bit over 3 degrees Fahrenheit, we're cooked. So what did the researchers think? Because of the warming climate, severe heat waves like the current ones can now be expected approximately every 15 years in North America, every 10 years in Southern Europe, and every 5 years in China, the researchers have said. If the global temperatures rise 2 degrees Celsius, which is 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, above pre-industrial levels, as could be the case if humans fail to rein in greenhouse gas emissions, they will occur every 2 to 5 years by around 2050, they said. The heat waves have also been hotter than they would have been without climate change, according to the study. Climate change has made the heat wave in southern Europe 2.5 degrees Celsius hotter, the one in the United States and Mexico 3.6 Celsius hotter, and the ones in China 1 degree Celsius hotter. If only the heat wave in China could have statistically occurred without global warming. The data used in the study had shown, but was still made 50 times more likely by climate change. Overwhelming role of climate change. Seems that the role of climate change is absolutely overwhelming, said climate scientist Federica Otto of the Grantham Institute for Climate Change and the Environment at Imperial College London. Quote, as long as we keep burning fossil fuels, we will see more and more of these extremes, she added. The most important thing is that they, meaning the heat waves, kill people, and they particularly kill and hurt and destroy lives and livelihoods of those most vulnerable, Otto had said. Among other things, the current heat has driven devastating wildfires in Greece that have caused mass evacuations in some regions. The researchers used wealthy data. One second here. Bear with me a moment here. Okay, the researchers used weather data and computer model simulations to compare the climate today and that of the past to see how far the current heat waves diverge from what would have been expected without global warming. Although the results have not yet been peer-reviewed, the techniques used in the study are considered scientifically valid. So this is part of the problem. And this is really quite interesting. The question is, why is climate denial still thriving online? An extreme global heat wave has been blamed on climate change. Online misinformation has evolved to counter the facts, despite platforms like TikTok banning climate denial. Record global temperatures on July 3rd kicked off the hottest week ever recorded as intense heat waves gripped the planet. Climate scientist Federica Otto of London's Grantham Institute for Climate Change and the Environment called the heat a death sentence for people and ecosystems, end quote. Yet the next day, a political journalist in the United Kingdom, Isabel Oakeshott, tweeted that, quote, climate change headbangers panicking about a few hot days last month can calm down. It's 13 degrees and pouring. She added that she was, quote, about to light the wood burner, end quote, and within a day, over 2.2 million people had seen the tweet. Oakeshott, a presenter on the conservative talk TV news channel and former editor of the Sunday Times, often comments on Twitter about, quote, climate change nuts, end quote. On July 5, she asked, quote, where's Greta when it's woolly jumpers in July? Amid the worst heat waves ever recorded in the United States, China, Mexico, Siberia, and beyond, a near unanimous scientific consensus that humans have induced global heating in large part by burning fossil fuels, how does such denial continue to flourish? Well, the largest global survey on climate change opinion, published in 2021, found that nearly 65% of people across diverse age ranges in more than 50 countries consider climate change a global emergency. Yet, researchers have found a recent resurgence in skepticism and denial. An anecdotal look at Deutsche Welle's own Planet A TikTok channel shows comments that peddle outright denial, but also question solutions such as the transition to clean energy. Quote, climate change is not real. It's just about the money. This is sad that you scared children. You should be ashamed of yourself, wrote one user after Deutsche Welle posted a video about young activists suing the state of Montana for not doing enough about the climate crisis. So how are they going to charge their electric vehicles when there is no electricity, another wrote, implying that renewable energy is not a reliable power source, despite wind and solar being the cheapest and fastest growing forms of energy. These are old rhetorical tricks that today are targeted less at climate science than solutions, says John Cook, a climatologist and senior research fellow at the University of Melbourne in Australia, and author of the Skeptical Science blog that has long debunked climate misinformation. The idea that, quote, solutions will be harmful or solutions won't work, quote, unquote, is a repackaging of old attacks on the cost of climate action from the 1990s, he added. Quote, the goalposts have moved, end quote, said Callum Hood, head of research at the Global Center for Countering Digital Hate, CCDH. Climate denial now employs deflection and, quote, sows doubt, end quote, to ultimately delay the energy transition. The logic runs that, quote, doing something is worse than doing nothing, end quote. Hood explained, referring also to the notion of, quote, climate inactivism, end quote, coined by climate researcher and author Michael Mann, M-A-N-N. Amplifying the climate misinformation online, quote, there are clear vulnerabilities in the way social media platforms are designed and governed at present, which allows such content to to rise to the surface, said Jenny King, head of climate research policy at the Institute of Strategic Dialogue, ISD, a global think tank researching extremism and disinformation. These platforms have been constructed with an algorithmic bias, quote unquote, that create, quote, echo chambers, end quote, to make users, quote, susceptible to consume, accept, and spread misinformation, end quote, explained Kathy Treen of the University of Exeter and co-author of the 2020 article on online misinformation and climate change. But what is the source of this misinformation? 10 super polluters, quote unquote, publishers, among them Russian state media and right-wing U.S. news site Breitbart, are the source of 69% of interactions with climate denial content on Facebook, according to a study by the CCDH. These, quote, toxic 10, end quote, publish overt climate denial and amplifies it on Facebook to, quote, prevent consensus on facts and solutions, end quote, noted the report. This is possible because Facebook has failed to enforce a 2021 promise to label posts featuring climate denial with links to correct information. Callum Hood, just 8% of the most popular posts on Facebook containing the toxic 10s misinformation carried labels. And Google further amplifies this content. Quote, Google promised it would not monetize climate denial, end quote, Hood had said. However, the big tech company paid out $3.6 million in ad revenue to the toxic 10, quote, unquote, over 6 months as they peddled climate denial. Meanwhile, researchers have revealed that, quote, fossil fuel sector linked entities paid Meta, which owns social media platform Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, around $4 million for ads in the lead up to the COP27 United Nations climate talks. The goal was, quote, to spread false, misleading claims on the climate crisis, net zero targets, and necessity of fossil fuels prior to and during COP27, noted a report by the Climate Action Against Disinformation, CAAD, a global research coalition. The majority of these were from Energy Citizens, a PR group of Peak Oil Lobby, the American Petroleum Institute. Well, COVID-19 and the Ukraine war drives climate misinformation as well. Misinformation thrives in moments of crisis, said Jenny King of intersecting health, cost of living, energy, and inflation crises in recent years. What she has called, quote, a global ecosystem for disinformation, end quote, has been exacerbated by, quote, historic wealth inequality, end quote, and an historic, quote, erosion of trust in institutions. The weaponizing of, quote, genuine trauma, end quote, was evident in the first waves of the pandemic when the term, quote, climate lockdown, end quote, emerged across social media, promoters claiming the lockdown was a dress rehearsal for a coming wave of, quote, green tyranny, end quote, King had explained. Typical of an online climate denial resurgence, she added, is the hashtag, quote, hashtag climate scam, which inexplicably became the top result when users searched for climate on Twitter in mid-2022, and owner Elon Musk has since been implicated in climate misinformation. Avoiding the cost of living and energy crisis linked to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, while deprioritizing concerns regarding the climate crisis, has been a tried and tested strategy of pro-fossil fuel political parties, including Germany's far-right Alternative aus Deutschland, which is known in English as Alternative for Germany. On July 3rd, the co-chairman of the party that has risen sharply in national polls Alice Wiedel said the German government's energy transition plans will cause widespread poverty and that converting home heating from gas to renewable energy was equivalent to a, quote, massacre, end quote. Well, fighting online climate denial, like Facebook, TikTok promised to ban climate denial content in April, but Jenny King says that such attempts at content moderation are, quote, crude, end quote, and, quote, unenforceable, end quote, adding that, quote, it is not criminal to deny climate change, end quote. The climate solution would be to, quote, demonetize, end quote, climate denial. She believes something big tech companies have so far largely failed to do. John Cook, meanwhile, has long advocated for, quote, preemptive inoculating messages, end quote, that neutralize what he calls, quote, climate disbeliefs, end quote, by explaining, quote, the flawed argumentation technique used in the misinformation, end quote, and that reinforced the scientific consensus on climate change. Quote, there is no silver bullet when it comes to the fight against climate misinformation, and a multifaceted approach is needed, including education, inoculation, correction, and actions by the platform, said Kathy Treen. This article was edited by Thomasine Walter of Deutsche Welle, German World, online. And yet the article was basically written by Stuart Braun, B-R-A-U-N. So that's our time with you today. Thank you for being with us. Hopefully you'll join us tomorrow on Wednesday, and we'll see what goes on till then. Until then, I want to wish you a goodbye and a good day. Thank you. Let me see if I can close this site. Yeah, we're going to end the episode now. Goodbye.